it's again very easy for a department to feel like what they do doesn't impact the entire city in a negative way, right? It's very easy for you and your department to be staff and you're going through the process and you're submitting your budget every year and you're managing it, monitoring it, you're doing your accountability without ever thinking about where have we not put an investment? Where have we not pruned trees? Where have we not paved asphalt? Where have we not put summer park staff for programming?
4 Degrees to the Streets is designed to empower anyone curious about places and spaces, not just persons with professional degrees or backgrounds. Here we will cover a host of topics, including transportation, health, housing, and the environment through the lens of racism, classism, and sexism, and give listeners the tools they need to overcome institutional barriers. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @4DegreesPod, and tune in every other Tuesday where Nemo and Jazz keep it 4 degrees to the streets.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the 4 degrees to the streets podcast. I cannot believe we are moving through season 4 so quickly. Today, we're going to be having a conversation about budget equity. Before we get into that, Nemo, how you doing? What's going on? Talk to me.
But yeah, I'm doing well. I can't complain. I do think that the weather is in cahoots with the work week. And I feel like it's been nice during the work week. And this is like the second, I feel like every Saturday I can remember in recent memory, it's just like pouring down nonstop rain. And so that is giving me low vibrations today, but I'm here. How are you?
Poo poo on the rainy weekend. That sucks. I'm well. I'll go here. My nail lady is on vacation, and I understand everybody deserves rest, but girl, warn somebody. Like, the last time I came, you should let me know, because of differently how to do my nails today. And
do you schedule in advance?
Advance for me is like Wednesday. I want to come on Saturday.
Oh, okay.
I'm not really, like, there was like an older black lady in the nail salon today. She's like, I'm coming on March 30th, Saturday at 2:00. I'm like, yeah, no, I don't know. Because if it looks fine, I'm not going to go. Like, if it looks good, I don't need to go. So she'll be back on the 28th and I will be there prom. Because these, I'm taking this out. This does
That's
not
a long great. Vacation, though. I'm somewhere between you and the older black lady. I usually would book like a week or two in advance, but because Chloe be booking up, so...
She's usually there. I know she doesn't work on Thursdays. I'm pretty sure she probably went to Vietnam, which is like where she's from. If she's taking that long of a vacation, I'm pretty sure she went back home. So, but good for her getting her vacation. I hope I can get a month vacation also. So.
Right.
but I'm just gonna share this before we get into the episode, just because I'm in a talkative mood. I'm reading The Power Broker, which Read Across America Day and Week just kind of ended. Also, happy Women's History Month. We're in March. And in my apartment, I have a New York City subway map on my wall just because LA doesn't have any transit. So I'd like to remember what transit looked like. And I'm reading The Power Broker, which is about like New York City and its development through Robert Moses. And did you know, Nemo, that the Triborough Bridge was supposed to, like, the Manhattan terminus was supposed to be at 100th Street instead of 125th. And the only reason why it's at 125th is because a wealthy newspaper owner owned property and he wanted the city to acquire his property.
No, I didn't know that, but I'm not in the slightest bit surprised. And I still... till this day, not much has changed really in terms of decision making and who gets the power to determine where things go, why things are the way they are. A lot of projects are developed in vacuums, and even when it gets to the point of any input, a team already designed it that the engineers were in the room, and maybe that was about it.
Yeah, to me, it was shocking because I totally agree with you. It's shocking to me because from a transportation standpoint, right, where the Triborough Bridge is, it's like you're definitely going south. Like you're not taking it to go north. So they even talk about it in the book of like, you cause motorists to have to drive an extra 25 blocks anyway, just to get to like Midtown. And so like, it couldn't even, it's not even an engineering feat. It literally is just like, we decided not to pick a fight with a rich man. It's like, dang, the infrastructure of the city is all because he owned land and he wanted y'all to buy it from him. Like when you think about the grand scheme of things, it's like, was that really necessary?
And I guess I don't have like too, I don't have the, subway system in New York, or even like the roadways are not quite in my mind. But I assume that maybe a lot of the subway station locations, all of those patterns may have been designed. So, they had to go around the highways in a way. And so, like you said, that one, that major thoroughfare then impacting and having a ripple effect elsewhere too.
Meanwhile, demolishing whole neighborhoods, talking about their slums and they're blighted and not even giving people fair market value for their land on the opposite side. So, power and influence and money. And so, speaking of power, influence, and money, we are having an episode today talking about budget equity. We did an episode in season one, which you can watch in person. We did that in person in DC. It's called Where the Money Reside. And we talked about the budget process. Where we left that episode off, if you go back and listen to it, Nemo and I started talking about budget equity. And we never really got to really like dig into budget equity because that was the end of our time. But today, 3 years later, we are coming back to it. And so, Nemo, talk to us briefly, just give us a high level of the budget process.
Yes, we were indeed at the end of our time during that episode. We were not on Zoom. We were in a studio. We had to go. When you think of the budget process, as it happens in most jurisdictions, there are four main pieces: formulation, legislation, execution, and accountability. So the beginning stage usually happens a few months before the jurisdiction's fiscal year calendar starts. So if your fiscal year calendar starts in January, for instance, you will likely be completing your budget formulation at least 6 months in advance. But the process to get to that portion of 6 months in advance usually starts about 3 to 4 months before that. So the budget is constantly in a cycle where you're in your current fiscal year, as well as planning for the next fiscal year, while also closing out the previous fiscal year. So all of those cycles happen concurrently. And keep the accounting and administrative staff in the government's very busy. So in that formulation stage, that is where city departments come together to determine their needs based on the previous year, any changes in priorities, determining their revenue projections, and then looking out into the future at their operating and capital budget. And so for the operating budget, you think about things as personnel, salaries. And then also the non-personnel aspects being any sort of contractual budget line items or supplies, materials, equipment, and that sort of thing. And so once you pass that formulation stage and the city determines a budget that is suitable for their needs, it often gets to the legislation stage. And that is where it could be, city council, depending on the government structure. That is also where public hearings are conducted. And that's often the town's first opportunity to look at the budget and comment on it. In certain jurisdictions, they do a more participatory budgeting process. It's not super common, but it is a direction that is ideal. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later when we get into budget equity. And then once that legislative piece happens, then it's voted and approved on. And then, as I mentioned, the cycle is continuing. So once that budget is passed, it goes to the execution stage. So monitoring the budget, allocating those resources into the specific department line items, doing any reprogrammings if changes happened after the budget was passed, if there's any need for additional resources that was not originally approved, emergency funds, contingency cash, all of those things happen in the execution stage. And then there are regular reporting that's required as well. And so as the budget cycle is continuing, there's also an annual responsibility for accountability. And that is called the Well, I think it used to be called the CAFR. Some jurisdictions change it, but the CAFR stood for Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, and some jurisdictions have changed it to just be Annual Financial Report, which I can understand because CAFR is a harsh acronym. So in a very quick nutshell, that is the budget process. And we do go into this in our Where the Money Resides episode in season one, episode eight.
I think it's always super important to tie planning back to the budget process, because planning is, yes, the formulation of plans for the future of the city, but rarely in those plans are cost incorporated, right? You might develop a bike and pedestrian safety plan, and it might say on Main Street, we need to add in protected bike lanes, a raised kind of median, some pedestrian scale lighting, and some hard medians. We need to plant more trees. And like we explain why all of that would help improve the problem of pedestrian fatalities or hit and runs or speeding or whatever. The two elements that shape like where the money's going to come from the budget and the capital improvements plan portion of the master plan or the regional plan for that area. And so planners and city regular citizens of a town should really have a good understanding of how that budget is processed and how it's formulated and created, because it shapes what is going to be built in the neighborhood and what is going to how things are going to operate.
Yeah, so when you think about budget equity, another way to think of it is budgeting for equity, or using a tool to budget for equity. And a lot of what we'll describe in how a budget equity tool works and how cities have used it, a lot of it can be applied to policy changes. It can be assigned to best practices. It can be assigned to programs. It can be applied to standard operating procedures within your department. And the real core of what it's used for is to develop strategies and also be actionable when it comes to reducing racial inequities, and improving outcomes for all groups. There are many definitions of equity, but I think it's always important to repeat a definition just to have a starting place. And a definition that we used, when we talked about this in our episode during season one, and we like to be consistent. So I'll use that same definition from PolicyLink, their equity manifesto. And they define equity as a just and fair inclusion into a society in which all can participate, prosper, and reach their full potential. Equity and equality are different. Equality is giving everybody the same thing. And I believe equity is allocating resources based on need because everyone has different circumstances. And why do people have different circumstances? Because there have been historical social political factors that impact people's opportunities and their experiences and their present day experiences. And so thinking about that for budget equity, it is often produced as a set of questions. And in that set of questions, it requires divisions, departments, cities, depending on the level, to ask themselves how their budgets may benefit or burden communities based on race, income, and ability. And a lot of what we've seen in equity, especially coming out of 2020, and certain investments made for equity, was racial equity. And racial equity should not be confused with leaving out other groups or other identifiers. So racial equity leads with race because race statistically can tell a lot about the opportunities that someone may have been that some the opportunities and the lack thereof. I'll keep it simple and say that. And a lot of that can be determined on race, but it does still consider an intersectional approach, and that shows up in income, it shows up in age, it shows up in gender, it shows up in physical ability as well. So once you have that equity framework to start with, then you can identify the programs and services that are either, again, as I said, benefiting certain groups or burdening certain groups, and then looking at those programs to close those gaps. A budget equity tool also focuses significantly on data and evidence. As I mentioned, looking at race as a stati to move statistical and use that as a benchmark and use that as a measurable evidence of, is certain programs we're doing making things worse, or are they making things better? And it also encourages significant community input. As I mentioned, with doing participatory budgeting, allowing residents to say what is needed first before the budget is even finalized, and making them, and getting, when you think about the participation continuum, which we have an episode about this, the name is blanking, on terms of community participation and what community engagement looks like, how to make community engagement work for you. Yes, that is the episode. And so when you think about that continuum, there's, you know, starting at input, and then being able to move along that process to ownership. And I think budget equity works best when communities get to have an ownership role in the budget. It should be used as early as possible, so it happens in that formulation stage. And then if you're using it for a policy or a program, the earlier the better. And then it can also happen year round for reprogrammings, capital requests, doing grant making, and then looking at how to use federal funds. And when thinking about federal funds, I think about transportation, for instance, that receive large pots to do certain surface improvements, be that streets, sidewalks. It's one thing to just receive those funds and use it, but how can those funds be applied with an equity lens to determine who can benefit most from it? Again, looking at the equity definition and allocating resources based on need.
I'll just add, because I think you covered that excellently, that the racial component of equity, particularly when thinking about the budget in a local jurisdiction, is also useful, because neighborhoods are segregated by race. When you pick a city, you can visibly identify the neighborhoods in which the white population lives, and the Black population, and the Asian population. Like, it's visible. And it's well mapped and well documented across the jurisdiction. And so I think that's another element from a practical standpoint, that, for example, women is also another identifier. Well, women are spread out across the city in all forms, and so it's not easily separated by ward 1 or district 7 or neighborhood number 17 or something like that, whereas race and income to that degree is more visible on like a map, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I feel like that's why data and equity and using tools, it's so complex, and it's so intertwined, because, you know, we'll talk about some of the cities that have put in action items or implement certain performance measures. That means at the start of whatever initiative they're doing, there's likely going to be more data that they need to collect. And I think as a collection of cities that are doing equity work, it's still in progress what data best practices when it comes to equity look like, because simply just asking people everywhere they turn their race and their age and, you know, whatever you want to ask isn't always the best way. It should be done meaningfully. It should be done intentionally. And so that's still in progress. I feel like we could do a whole other episode on equity and data. Truly. But that's something to always have in the background of like, well, okay, well, I want to do this in my city, but we don't have that information now. It's like, well, you got to kind of start collecting it at some point. And that's always a whole other task and responsibility, and requires coordination too.
So in getting to the cities, we're going to highlight Dallas in Texas, Seattle in Washington, Nashville in Tennessee, Tacoma, also in Washington, Portland in Oregon, come on geography, and New York in New York, New York City in New York State. Rare do I ever talk about New York State. If I say New York, I promise you I don't mean Westchester. Like, I mean New York City. So let's start with Dallas. And I will say that it is interesting to see how I was very happy with Dallas's budget equity tool, because Texas doesn't scream equity to me just off the pages. So very happy to see this in Dallas.
Off the pages, off the street, off the side, like.
Very happy to see this in Dallas. Go Dallas. So they have a racial equity plan which guides each of their departments. So take planning, take give me some city departments. Take parks and recreation, buildings, public works.
Libraries.
Yep, something simple like a library excellent. On how to implement equity into their plan. So like Nemo talked about, it kind of starts at the budget process starts at the departmental level with each department coming up with their necessary line items for their operations and capital for the year. The Office of Equity and Inclusion for the City of Dallas is the one who kind of created the plan. And the plan starts with, like Nemo mentioned, some very heavy equity indicators, which was a report that they had done. They had done a deep dive into their data early in 2019, and it identified 60 indicators that are measurable outcomes that can be compared across racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic lines. Some of them that fall under, like, the Department of Health, for example, would be smoking, physical activity, childhood food security. Some of them that fell under public safety would have been, like, violent crime, domestic violence, traffic stops. For these metrics, the city of Dallas then gave themselves an equity rating, which tells them under that metric where they have the most or least disparity along racial lines. And so the plan then has a bunch of goals: environmental justice, economic and workforce community development, housing, infrastructure, and public safety and wellness. Each goal, right? So the environmental justice goal is then tied to measurable equity indicators. And then each of those goals are also tied to action targets that the department for which that falls under their purview, that's a hard word for me to say, their purview would try to accomplish. And then it gives them progress measures, which say, okay, within a 3 to 5 or 10 year time frame, how will you be able to address this disparity based on that equity measure? And so just to give a high level example, one of the goals is housing. And so one of the equity indicators that was identified under housing was home ownership, which was measured as a ratio between the percentage of Black and white Dallas residents that own their own home. The target there was for the city, from their housing and community development office and their planning office, to deploy anti-displacement strategies in transitioning, read, gentrifying neighborhoods to address longstanding inequities and ensure that zoning is inclusive of historically disadvantaged communities. And so the department responsible for this was the Department of Planning and Urban Design and the Department of Housing and Community Development. And they were to work on making a mixed-use land kind of neighborhood plan that addressed all of these issues. And so trying to adjust their zoning to be more incorporative of different home styles. Instead of having a requirement for single-family detached, maybe having some single-family attached mixed in with some small-scale apartments and some neighborhood-size scale apartments. And so that's just an example of how they help the departments think about the different tasks that your department is tasked with, right? The Department of Planning tasked with zoning, thinking about how that task can be implemented through an equity lens. And then just numbers. They have a 2022 to 2023 fiscal year budget. It included 23 initiatives for equity. That was about $20 million. And when you open up their budget, it has like a little icon of like three little people, which lets you know like this budget item, whether it's for like a salary of a person or a capital expense, is allocated towards in quote unquote equity indicator. And so I thought it was very well connected in the sense that like if you read the budget, you can see what they are. They also have a website with like a tracker for each department. So I thought it was pretty comprehensive. I did, however, think that the amount of money allocated towards equity in the budget was a little small. It's only 1% of the city's overall capital and operating budget for that same year. It was exactly like 0.4%. And so I like the data effort. I like the planning effort. It could have a little more money behind it, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think Dallas did a really good job in connecting their data, leading with data, you know, essentially saying this is why we're doing this and this is how it connects to the larger goal. I can imagine that also made it helpful for, you know, each department to get behind it and understand why they need to do it. I don't know if I saw this, but I think one thing that I would have liked to see on their main dashboard is like the resources spent to date. I know that's a lot of work, but I think to see that would be helpful too, because if something's in progress, it's like, okay, well, has anything been spent or is it stuck somewhere? And if it's stuck somewhere, is it a theme throughout the investments of where it's getting stuck and what's required? And yeah, I think, you know, $2 million to make this sort of, for this specific example, to make a significant footprint is hard. And also, I know they also split it up by their short-term investments and their long-term investments. And so I think that might be another piece too that could help. And I think the dashboard starts with the short-term investments. So if you don't keep scrolling, you could really miss the long-term investments too. And then, yeah, I think adding the resources spent to date would help with that accountability piece, which is a core, piece of a lot of the budget equity tools. And speaking of core piece, I will get into Seattle as an example. We also mentioned them very briefly in our last episode. I'm not biased by growing up 30 minutes south of Seattle, but Seattle is the OG when it comes to racial equity tools and racial equity planning. And I think it's so awesome that they started and have paved the way for a lot of cities to create a great model. And so they launched their initial racial equity tool that is applied to policies, programs, and as well as budget. They initially, I don't know if they initially applied it to budget and then determined that that would only be like a drop in the bucket. So then they required, at least each department initially to apply the tool to a minimum of 4 projects to be able to expand it to not just budget, but looking at multiple areas. And then I think another thing to know about Seattle is it follows the format of it being a set of questions that you ask yourself as a department. I don't know if I mentioned this. Yes, the tool was originally launched in 2012, and then they did a slight revision in January of this year, so January 2024. So they set outcomes from the beginning, and the outcome is really important. It really guides the rest of the tool development by being able to connect their specific opportunity areas. So one of their opportunity areas, for instance, was jobs. And so looking at an outcome being the result that you want to achieve through your actions, the outcome for an example outcome for a job opportunity area was to decrease racial disparities in the unemployment rate. Again, thinking about two things that are very specific to tracking, looking at race and looking at unemployment rates. And then everything that happens in between to significantly reduce that. And then the next phase is, determining the benefits, the burdens, opportunities to minimize harm. That's where the strategy piece comes in, doing evaluation, raising awareness, and then reporting back, which gets that accountability piece of it's one thing to just do the tool, publish it, make it available. But what happens, you know, at the end of that process or, you know, 2 to 3 to 4 or 5 years later?
Seattle may be an OG in the budget process. It's a gloomy little place, Nemo. It's when I was there, when I was in the public market, I saw like a apron for sale and it said Seattle, America's wet dream. And I was like, that is accurate, because it wasn't exactly raining, but it wasn't exactly dry outside either, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's always a bit moist.
But I do like Seattle's because I think that incorporating into the programs and the policies of the department is a very important level, and it kind of goes outside of like the office of budget into more how do we make the city a more equitable place, if that makes sense. The next one we'll get into is Nashville. And I will admit, Nashville's left me a bit confused. Essentially, it's a questionnaire. It's called the Budget Equity Tool, or the BET. And it has three kind of points to adopt an equity lens, to be data driven, and to promote assessment and accountability. Within each of those lenses, there's about 2 to 3 questions that I'm assuming the department head is supposed to answer and submit with their proposed budget. So just an example, some of the questions were, in what ways will your department use the budgeting process to advance equity? What persisting gaps or limitations in your overall budget could inhibit your department's ability to advance racial and economic equity? Another question will be, how will your department use targeted data to help inform recruitment, retention, and promotion efforts for staff of color, including executive, supervisory, and entry-level staff? And I think those are just some examples of the questions. I think those are all great questions. But what was unclear to me is, how are the responses to the questionnaire that's submitted with the department level budget used to evaluate the budget process?
Yeah, and that might be the part, depending on if they publish this or not, how they do that incorporation into the budget process. I know some jurisdictions, they make it really clear to the public, you know, us going in to determine. But then some of the analysis is actually done in a place that's not published as much, and looking at each specific budget request and determining if there is a racial equity or an equity case for the, you know, enhancement or reduction. So, you know, say if they're submitting a reduction to their, I'm going to keep using libraries again, but, you know, to their, I'm thinking of an example for libraries specifically, but, you know, maybe they have to reduce staffing across the libraries, and then being able to say, well, this will particularly have an impact at this library in this neighborhood, because we know that there is less internet connectivity in this neighborhood and residents rely on the library for this resource. And, you know, they may need help getting a library card. They may need help, you know, figuring out how to, you know, use certain things on the computer, and having less staff could then make them have, could make residents overall just have a lower customer service experience or a lack of getting what resources that they would normally get from the library, just as a super broad example. And so then that case could be connected to an argument to either reject that reduction because it will have harm. And so I would hope, you know, that is a process being done, but sometimes it may not be documented as publicly, or if they don't publish a report afterwards to determine. And, you know, similarly, we'll use another example from Washington State, Tacoma, which is the third largest state in Washington State. They have a little over 200,000 people, so just south of Seattle, about 45 minutes, and about 40% of their population identify as residents of color. And similarly, they also have a questionnaire, and they've done a lot of work to embed equity across their city, and using a lens to not just budget, but other, you know, other areas of their city as well. They actually, I think, are really, well, they have office hours. So you mentioned, like, what if somebody submits a poor response? They have that opportunity. And they also work with their Office of Equity and Human Rights to review the proposals, and also work with departments to make sure that they're submitting quality proposals. And so I think that training piece from the onset with looking at tools and looking at budget equity tools are really important to make sure that the departments are able to produce quality to ensure a better assessment of the benefits or harm.
Yeah, I think that's helpful. I'll go back to Nashville, and I think that's great. The example that you use on how it might possibly be, the questionnaire might be used like internally. I think my general thing is, I feel like transparency also makes things equitable. Like, when the situation is not transparent, there's not a way to confirm or deny whether or not the process was followed in an equitable manner. And I also think that when it comes down to like how cities are using tax dollars, should be a pretty equitable, I mean, a pretty transparent process. Like, I'd like to see how are you using, I think we quoted this. I know I quoted this the last time, but J. Cole talks about like how they're using my money is very troubling. And it, you know, I'd like to know how is it being done. The process should be a bit more transparent. Do you want to go, want to stay on the Pacific Northwest in Portland, or you want to jump to New York first?
Yeah, we'll go to Portland, since a lot, you know, maybe by proximity, but a lot of the examples both in Seattle, Tacoma, and Portland are similar, in that it is a similar questionnaire or worksheet to identify those positive or negative impacts based on race or other indicators. One thing I think that stands out about Portland is that before they implemented this, their budget equity assessment tool, all of their departments released 5-year racial equity plans. So before they even started the budget equity piece, they already knew internally they had a, you know, an equity statement, they had goals, they had a vision they were working towards. And their city council also was behind, you know, stood behind it and passed a resolution requiring city, requiring departments to use the tool and base their budget decisions on their racial equity plans and also their ADA, American Disabilities Act transition plans. So, you know, I, assuming that may have been another ongoing transition that was happening within the city. And the core of their resolution was based in anti-racism, structural racism, institutional racism. And so some of their goals was to make service levels more equitable, tracking and reporting based on community or geography, improving participation. And so they actually did implement a participatory budget process that paused during COVID, but it recently started back up in 2023, where each, you know, district, they pick a committee, and that committee has $1 million to allocate to where they, you know, where they best see fit. And those committees meet ongoing, and they actually take that feedback and then put it into the formulation of the budget process. And I really like that it's not just a one-time event on a Wednesday at 5:30 to get their input for the budget, but actually identifying a committee and having it be over time, I think really helps with that ownership piece when it comes to public participation.
I'd agree. I think that's a good example as we transition from having a conversation about transparency to public participation. I'll bring up New York. It's not a budget tool. It is a department level initiative that was only implemented for within a particular point in time. This plan came out in 2015, so it's kind of old now, but it's always my favorite. It's a good framework because it shows how one department, I think it's easy, right? A lot of places think about the budget as, so even though they're made up of department level kind of needs and plans, I think it's easy for cities to say, like, it's hard for us to make a budget equitable because it's like the whole city. But I think this is New York, and their New York City Parks Department is a really good example of like how one particular department can impact the equity of an entire city. In that, similar to libraries, the Parks Department has assets all over the city. And so the quality and the maintenance of those assets drastically impacts the neighborhood and drastically impacts, since it drastically impacts neighborhoods, it drastically impacts people. And there is an opportunity for the impact to not be equitable across neighborhoods. And so that's what was going on in New York City. The Community Parks Initiative launched in 2014 with the New York City Department of Parks and Recreation and the Office of the Mayor of New York. Another data-driven approach to look at park quality and neighborhood characteristics. And it was a simple data analysis which says, okay, which parks received capital improvements above a certain number? They chose $250,000 and below $250,000. And then what are the characteristics of that neighborhood based on census tracts? What are populations that are below the federal poverty line, population density, and population growth within those particular census tracts? That analysis resulted in identifying parks that had high percentages of persons under the federal poverty line that were slightly more dense than the average for New York and had some population growth, but had not had a major capital investment in their parks in over a few decades. I think the years is 1992 to 2013, so about 20 years worth. And so from that, they identified these parks in these neighborhoods and they put money towards doing capital improvements in those neighborhoods. And so the map, and we'll have a link to the plan in our show notes, but the map, if you look at it, shows those targeted areas as being, if you know New York, this might sound familiar to you. If you don't know New York, it might be news to you, as being Eastern and Central Brooklyn, Northern Manhattan, and the South Bronx, and the eastern parts of Staten Island, and deep east in Queens. Those are the neighborhoods that had both the necessary neighborhood characteristics to show some sort of disadvantage and did not receive investment in their parks in the past 20 years. And so they then targeted these neighborhoods for capital improvements to repair their parks. And I always liked this plan, one, because it was kind of, it was created by Mitchell Silver, who's a Black planner and used to be the president of the APA. And so he is like very thorough. It's great to see him be able to put in some of his planning knowledge into a city, but also because it's, again, very easy for a department to feel like what they do doesn't impact the entire city in a negative way, right? It's very easy for you and your department to be staff and you're going through the process and you're submitting your budget every year and you're managing it, monitoring it, you're doing your accountability without ever thinking about, where have we not put an investment? Where have we not pruned trees? Where have we not paved asphalt? Where have we not put summer park staff for programming? It's easy to see what you are doing, right? And to say, we spent this amount of money this year and we were fiscally responsible, but how are you being neighborhood responsible? And that's why I like this program, because although it's not a long-term thing, right, they put an initial investment into it and to work on a few of those parts that they identified. But I will say that my major critique of it is that it wasn't like a long-term, okay, we're changing the way that we decide which parks to make capital or operational improvements in. It's just, we're doing this today, and we're going to go back to normal next year. And I think that is kind of my biggest critique of it, even though I think it is a great initiative. I just wish it wasn't an initiative. It was a process.
Yeah, I love how you said like being neighborhood responsible. And it makes me think about, I think what can be a highlight of having an urban planning background is, I feel like as a planner, you have to think about the city in from all the different angles. You have to think about schools, you have to think about economics, you have to think about housing, you have to think about health. But we like spend years studying this and thinking about things from all of these different aspects. And then when you get into the city, parks is thinking about parks, you know, transportation is thinking about transportation, health is thinking about health, and they are completely different offices, sometimes in different parts of the city. And they are responsible for their stuff, and that they are responsible for what they need to report on, and they are responsible for their budget. And it's like, I think when tying it back to equity, that's why it's so important to have a base level training. I think just like, you know, employees are required to have you know, depending on where you fall in your agency, but like writing or like, you know, or like critical thinking skills, like some skills are basic for employment and they're written on the position description. I think a lot more positions and entry points in government need to have equity as a basis for, as a, you know, what is it called? Knowledge, skills, and abilities when it comes to hiring. Because having that historical timeline and context is so important for doing future initiatives. And looking at the historical context of historical inequities and making them better. You can't make it better if you don't even know, because you don't know the racist history of the place you live or the place you work, I should say. It's so important to understand, especially with this parks, with the parks example of like, why were certain parts of the city disinvested, rather than just coming in day one and just allocating resources based on vibes. I know we just went through all of those cities rather quickly, but hopefully they were just the right bite-sized nuggets of information to get you thinking about where you live, or where you've lived before, what you've seen, and how it's been framed in the context of an investment. And if the investment was made, what did you see after the investment was made? Because there can be a long time before things take action. But Jasmine, yeah, what were some of your takeaways? What are you leaving the rapid fire discussion with today?
I'm honestly surprised, and it could be just our lack of research done. I was definitely thinking we would see more cities kind of spread across the country, if that makes sense. Like we see like a cluster kind of in the Pacific Northwest, I think, based on like Seattle's success rate, but I was definitely expecting to, like, I'm surprised I didn't find one for Chicago. So I guess I'm saying that I'm curious about, in the budget circles and the circles of people who go to conferences for budgets and the circles of people that go to work events that work in on city budgets, how much of this conversation is happening there and how much of it is truly about like financial responsibility and a fiduciary responsibility to your taxpayers. Like, how much of it has gotten into the, because what we're talking about, really why planning is so, the budget is so important to planning, is we're talking about the societal implications of a dollar. Every dollar, you know, a penny earned is a penny saved. And what we're talking about here is a penny allocated today in neighborhood X is a penny not allocated today in neighborhood Y. But if every year you're only allocating pennies towards neighborhood X, at a certain point that becomes the better neighborhood for schools, for libraries, for whatever it is that's receiving these dollars. And so that's why I like having this conversation about budget equity, because it demonstrates how like money and the dollar that is contributed to it definitely will shape the lived experience and the quality of life of people in different neighborhoods. That's my little takeaway.
Yeah, no, I love that. I don't love it. I don't love the disproportionate distribution of resources, but I love the example of what you can see happen long term. And yeah, I think your point makes me think about a lot of the budget equity tools come out of the equity departments in a city, if they have one, or come out of a human rights equity department. But I think something I want to leave with this conversation is that it can start small. It can start just from your team. As I mentioned with the budget formulation, you may be one division in your department. You can take these questionnaires, you can take these examples from other cities and apply it to your work. And it only fares better when decisions are made, because it forces you to do some research. It forces you to have a data-driven approach. It forces you to use evidence to say, this is why we need this. This is why we need it more. Here are the numbers. The numbers don't lie. So I know it can seem, you know, when we use words like initiative, tool, indicators, performance measures, metrics, like I know all of that can sound really overwhelming, but it can really start with pen and paper and looking at division level, department level, you know, at any level, and can still be applied and make a difference.
So with that, we will leave you. I want to acknowledge two things that are happening. The podcast is going in person. We're doing some really cool things outside of this podcast. And so on March 28th, Nemo will be moderating a panel with Smart Growth America. And so you can find more information about that panel on Smart Growth America's platforms. And we'll have something on our page about it also. And then on the 14th of March, I will be sitting on a panel along with a couple other great planning entrepreneurs for APA's Women's History Month panel presentation. And so see us in person on Zoom. You can see our faces and everything we got going on. We hope that you enjoyed this episode.
Yes, and we drop episodes every other Tuesday. And you can follow us on social media at the number 4 Degrees Pod.
Peace out, y'all.